From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of June, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at TotalFarmMarketing.com. She's in Hollister, Missouri. And a bit later in the program, we'll take a detailed look at the weather forecast across the Midwest. And we'll start in the Northwest because it's going to set up some interesting things that'll come in the middle of July. We'll do that with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and we'll do it all right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn today settled at $6.64 a quarter. It was up 4.5 cents. September down two, however, at $5.51. And new crop at $5.35.75 for the December, down 3.25 cents. July soybeans, $13.85, 9.5 lower. The August down six at $13.46. And November beans at $13.25, down two for the day. Bean meal on the afternoon at $3.54.20, down $9.10. The bean oil at $62.13. $1.46 higher. Soft red winter wheat up 10.25 in the July, $6.61.25 the settlement price, and the hard red July at $6.12 up 15.5 cents. Spring wheat up 20.5 cents in the September at $8.03.25. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby August at $122.87.5. That's down 30 cents per 100 pounds. The feeders at $155.70 were $2.65 lower, and lean hogs down $2.97.5 at $100.72.5 per 100 pounds. Gold futures for the day at $1,781.60, up $4.20. The price of a crude oil barrel at $73.04, 19 cents higher. Diesel fuel at $2.16.3 per gallon, up around 9.3 cents. And the wholesale price of gasoline, the RBOB, at $2.26.8, 3.8 cents higher. Ethanol futures unchanged at $2.48 on this Wednesday afternoon. Jackie Vakes now joins us from TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Hollister, Missouri. Hi, Jackie. I hope you're having a good Wednesday afternoon.
Oh, yes. Sun is shining. Can't beat it.
Let's begin with the support and resistance levels as usual this week, but I'll bet you've updated the futures months that you're using.
In corn, we're going to be September, December, and March. And in beans, I got rid of July, and so we will be August, September, and November in beans. My corn, September, 543 support, 602 resistance, crossover is at 727. Interestingly enough, it traded down to the uptrend line and came back off of it. December, 518, 563, crossover is at 665. It also traded down to the uptrend line and bounced off of it. When we look at March, 536, 576, and March actually has an uptrending channel going in it. The top of the channel is 641 and the bottom of the channel is 444. On beans, August, 1328 and 1550 with a crossover at 1655. September, 1261, 1465, crossover is 1405. November, 1264, 1322 with a crossover of 1524. Export inspections, Todd, wheat exports still running 16% behind just like last week. If I looked at the average weekly exports needed to reach the USDA projections, wheat at 16.4 million bushels. Corn, 73% ahead. Last week was 75% ahead. And there we need 49.9 million bushels per week. Soybeans, 56% ahead compared to 57 last week. And there we need 6.9 million bushels to be able to reach the number that the USDA is projecting.
Anything on the weather from your perspective?
I think, you know, as long as the weather keeps shifting the way it is right now, the market is going to do exactly what it's doing. And, you know, the acreage report is going to be a big driver in grain stocks next week. We don't have any estimates out on it just yet. I think they're all going to come out probably tomorrow. But weather. It's put premium in, take premium out. Put premium in, take premium out. And anybody who's lived through these markets knows that that's just the way it is.
Do we have a better sense of what the crop is doing based on the conditions report from USDA?
I started last week with the trend line comparisons that Dr. Cordonnier puts together, and I wanted to give you the comparisons. When you look at corn, states below trend line last week were 21%. This week it's 35.5%. And Iowa, Minnesota, Michigan, North Dakota, South Dakota, that's what made up those acres. Those are very important acres. At trend line, 23.1% of the acres this week, 25.7% last week, and above trend line, 32.4% this week, 44.3% last week. And so you can see that, you know, that trend has been going the other way. Now, this coming Monday will be the first time, you know, that we're going to get to see what maybe happened from the rains, what all the speculating is about. But when I looked at the actual condition drops, you know, you look at North Dakota went down just 3%. It's at 39 compared to 69 last year. South Dakota down 11% to 34, was 82 last year. Nebraska down 1% to 83. Last year it was at 74. So Nebraska is actually better. Wisconsin, 50% compared to 85 last year. And you just keep going. 56% good to excellent in Iowa compared to 85. 64% good to excellent in Illinois compared to 59 last year. So when we look at the bean conditions, we moved from this week we had 39.8% of the acres in below trend line. Last week it was 26. And no big surprise, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin moved into those levels. When it comes to at trend line, this week we had 23.2 compared to 37 the week before. Illinois happens to be in the at trend line. And above trend line, 32.7%, and that's exactly the same as what we had the week before. Ag Resource had a nice blurb this morning. I know I could have done this myself, but he did the work, so I'm going to give him the credit. He combined the soybean acres for the Dakotas and Minnesota came in at 20.5 million acres, which is equal to that of Iowa and Illinois. In corn, Dakotas and Minnesota planted 17 million acres, which is 19% of the U.S. total. So a 10% yield loss in corn and soybeans in the Dakotas and Minnesota could produce a U.S. production loss of close to 300 million bushels of corn and just over 100 million bushels of beans.
And that's just on the current acreage, not an updated figure, which may or may not include more acres from that part of the world. Speaking of the world, Brazil, Argentina, and China, what do you have this week?
Well, when we look at Brazil, this Safrinha corn crop is just, they're just tearing their hair out. They're about 2 to 3% harvested on it. Their yields are just all over the place. And they're very, very worried about it because, you know, because the yields are coming in so much lower, they're not sure they're going to be able to fill the forward contracts that they had. And so they'll have to renegotiate with the contracts with the grain companies. Well, we all understand what that's like. But the biggest thing they're worried about is that extended corn harvest may not leave them much time for tillage, you know, or anything else before they have to start planting the 22 crop. We look at Mato Grosso. It's a 15% increase in production costs. And I mean, we're all aware that we're going to see higher production costs, you know, and this is for the 21-22 season. And of course, it's seeds, appreciation of the dollar. That's the thing we don't think about, but they have to. The appreciation of the dollar, fertilizers, and pesticides. Now, just in the month of May alone, those prices went up 2.5%. And at the same time, the farmers were pretty proactive. They got 90% of their fertilizer already purchased, so that's a good thing. But they said in light of what's going on, because of the high soybean prices and the good exchange rate, which they still do have a good exchange rate, they think that we'll probably see about 4% more bean acres than what we would have seen this year. And so they did, I just have a blurb about Brazil increased their crop financing by 6.3%. And the thing I wanted to point out to our guys is they increased their crop financing. The reals that are going to be given to the farmer will be at plus 7% year over year on interest. So plus 7% above prime. And that is that. Yeah, I mean, +7 should scare everybody, no matter how you look at it. But yeah, it's pretty scary. Argentina is stepping back. You know, they had come out and said they were going to ban beef exports because they're going to step back because they're trying to stop runaway inflation. So they went to JBS and some of the other larger companies, and they're going to let them export up to half of what they had for their levels last year. It's interesting because these beef restrictions that we saw come out, they've got a very uneasy relationship right now in Argentina between the government and the farmer. It's always pretty touchy, but it's really, really touchy now. And those exports bring in tens of billions of hard currency into that country, and they can't afford to do without that. And I'm sure that somebody took them and shook them by the shoulders and said, "Hey, where are we going to get this from?" You know. And so, it's interesting that the government, they just took office 18 months ago, but they've already tried to nationalize a bankrupt soy exporter. They banned corn exports, and then they backtracked on all of that. So the thing that they're seeing is the ban didn't stop the high beef prices. And that's exactly what they were hoping for, you know, is that's what would happen. But prices in Buenos Aires, just to give you an idea, on beef are up 76% from a year ago. This is from the Beef Institute down there. So that is just absolutely unbelievable. I go in our store and I make my, you know, it makes me sick looking at it. I can't imagine what it's like for them, you know. So China, they bought 330,000 metric tons of new crop beans today. So that, that gave beans some initial positive action. And of course, then weather still all trumps everything. So I wanted to just add a little blurb. Last week, we had talked about the rebound in the hog herd. And just to give our listeners some perspective, China has a hog herd that's 416 million hogs, and that was as of March from the USDA. Our hog herd is 77.5 million. So just since the beginning of the year, they have culled 3.5 million of low productive breeding cells. And that's less than 1% of their herd, but would be 4.5% of ours. So I think that, you know, isn't that interesting? I mean, you know, can you picture that? How many, 416 million hogs? Oh my gosh.
It's half the hogs on the planet.
They're very smart animals. I can tell you that much. When I did nutrition consulting, they can figure out how to turn on water. They can figure out how to open a gate. They can figure so many things out. It's pretty amazing sometimes.
Anything else before I let you go?
Yeah, I just got in my something extra for this week. I found something I thought that was kind of interesting. Any of us who do go out to eat occasionally, we know that we see chicken wings everywhere. So chicken wing prices have just been going through the roof. And Wingstop, you know, which is a very common chain, they've now started and changed a carryout brand called Thighstop. They're going to run Thighstop. I know, as a virtual brand out of their 1,400 restaurants and sell bone-in and boneless thighs alongside fries and corn. Thighstop is going to allow Wingstop to save money in the future by buying whole birds. Now, this is where it's interesting because they're going to buy whole birds, so chicken prices are going to go up. Instead of just wings and breasts, by buying the whole bird, they can bring their cost down to about $1.50 a pound. And Charlie Morrison, who is the chairman and CEO of Wingstop, said wholesale price of wings a year ago was about 98 cents a pound. Today it's $3.22. So pretty serious, you know, and so it's going to be moving forward. Chicken prices will look to keep increasing because plants still aren't, they can't slaughter enough chickens to meet the demands of places like Applebee's and Chili's. So I guess wings are like wildfire. They just all over the place. So now we're going to have thighs all over the place.
when you first mentioned that and said it was virtual, I thought they were doing buy stops, as in a B.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No. It's thigh stops, and I just think it's such a funny cock. Well, I guess it's a very clear description, right? Because
yep.
It's a chicken thigh. But it just sounds so funny. I can't help it. So always interesting. Always something going on.
Yeah. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it all. We'll talk with you again next week.
Yep. Have a good one.
You too. That's Jackie Vex. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Hollister, Missouri. You can find and listen to the closing market report in our Commodity Week program on our website anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org or in any of your favorite podcast applications, including Stitcher and SoundCloud, NPR One, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast too. And it's pretty likely that if you ask Google or maybe Alexa smart speaker to play the closing market report, it'll come up when you ask. Drew Lerner now joins us from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City at worldweather.cc to talk about the forecast. Drew, I want to start not in the Midwest with the Corn Belt because coming out of the West, we usually get the bulk of the weather that we receive, sometimes coming up from the Gulf Coast too. But it appears there might be some interesting things developing in the West. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, a pretty strong ridge of high pressure is going to be building up over the Pacific Northwest and British Columbia. This is going to bring some record-setting heat into those areas. It's been very dry, as you may recall, in the Pacific Northwest in particular, but even in British Columbia to a certain degree. I don't think we've had hardly any precipitation this spring, and unirrigated cereal crops, winter crops in Washington and Oregon have not done well at all in this environment. Well, now we've already had one wave of heat that occurred, I think, about a week ago, but we are about to go into another one. This time we're going to be over 100 up into British Columbia, and it wouldn't surprise me to see a temperature reading of 109, 110, possibly in Washington State, maybe Oregon. So we're talking about impressive heat, and that's going to take place this weekend into the early part of next week. And then we're going to watch pretty closely because I believe there's a disturbance coming in behind that that's going to want to push the ridge to the east a little bit. And that means the heat is going to be pushed into the western part of Canada's prairies, Alberta and western Saskatchewan in particular, and Montana, and possibly a small part of the far western Dakotas. And that is probably going to take place from mid to late week next week. It should be a pretty impressive little event. The news media will be all over it. The good news, if you want to call it that, is that we will keep the heat in the western part of North America. The ridge breaks down very quickly, allows that disturbance that forces the heat to the east to move over the top of the ridge and very quickly come into a northwest flow through the Midwest again, so that we finish out next week and the holiday weekend with another disturbance moving southeastward from Canada and bringing another round of showers and thunderstorms to many central and eastern Midwest locations, and another shot of somewhat coolish air. So for the Midwest, not a lot of change because of that. But boy, the heat out there in the West, that will be impressive.
Yeah, so as this spills off to the southeast and brings cooler, I assume some wetter weather. How far to the east? And what I'm really concerned about this morning, I spoke with a representative of a cooperative, about 50 million bushels in the northwest part of Iowa. They'll join us on our Commodity Week program tomorrow, by the way. And he said they hadn't had a generalized rain in their part of the service territory, which runs from, let's say, Sioux Falls to South Dakota to Worthington and kind of in that corner of Iowa there, since last fall. And they really, while they've gotten some spotty things, even some 3-inch rains in a few places, they're just suffering big time there. Any relief for them at all coming?
I think there is a possibility of a couple of rounds of shower and thunderstorm activity there. I would stop short of suggesting a good soaking, but there should be relief, definitely. There's going to be a couple of frontal systems that move through that region as we go forward through the next week and maybe a third one, perhaps, depending on what happens to this little disturbance I just mentioned. So there is an opportunity here for these waves of energy to come through the region. The sad thing is that we're not convinced that we've got large volumes of moisture to work with because of all of the storminess that's going to be east of the Mississippi River. And it'll be kind of hard to pull some moisture up into northwest Iowa and southeastern South Dakota for at least the first frontal system. And the second one will probably be in a cooler air mass when that one comes around. So there won't be a lot of moisture with that. That's going to be during the early to middle part of next week. But I think that event that I was mentioning for later next week, going into the holiday weekend, that one could bring a better drink of water maybe to that area. But of course, now we're talking about a week to 10 days from now. And you know, what do we know when it comes to predicting weather that far out?
How about tomorrow and Saturday? Tomorrow through Saturday, looks like there'll be rainfall in a large part of Iowa, Illinois, and parts to the east.
That's right. And that's going to be a rough go. You know, last night we had some strong thunderstorms in central Iowa and some hail was reported already, a little bit of damage coming out of that. It wasn't widespread, but I think it was a little foreshadow of what we'll see tonight, more likely tomorrow night into Saturday. And there will be aggressive thunderstorms and training of thunderstorms occurring from portions of Missouri and parts of Iowa into Indiana and Michigan. And the rain amounts are going to be pretty impressive. The sad thing is, the frontal boundary that's responsible for this first round or two of thunderstorms in that area doesn't get very far to the east before it goes stationary, and we wait for that little reinforcing shot of cool air coming around for early in the week, and so we get yet another round or two of rain. So by the time we get done with a big part of this next 7 days in that area, we are talking about 4 to 10 inches of rain, four to six easy, and localized amounts up to 10 or a little bit more in a few spots. So it's going to be a mess, and there's going to be some standing water around for a little while. We may have some damage from the hail, and we may have some damage from standing water in some low-lying areas. The ground is dry down deep, so the water shouldn't stand around too long, but it doesn't take long to hurt the crops in those low-lying areas.
Yeah, so you said that this will train across, meaning that it'll stay kind of in a line across a good portion of the area. Is it running from the southwest to the northeast on a line like that, or is it the opposite direction from the northwest to the southeast?
Yeah, it should be primarily the southwest to northeast. Now, the first round of the storms will actually go the other direction. So when we start this tomorrow night going into Saturday, we'll move the storms from Iowa and parts of northern or northeastern Missouri into central Illinois and probably west central and southwestern Indiana. But the storms that occur after that will occur along the frontal boundary, and that will lie from Missouri to Michigan and Ohio. So the storms for the next two rounds of storms will come from the southwest and move northeastward. So it's a little bit of a zigzag, but the bottom line is Illinois is pretty close to ground zero along with parts of northeast and east central Missouri. So they get it from both directions.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.